Hello, welcome to the Long Shot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Christian Demetrius. Christian is an Emmy Award-winning cinematographer, multitask cameraman, topside and underwater, experiment drone pilot, and television presenter. He specializes in wildlife and natural history. He's had IMAX Films, the BBC, National Geographic, Discovery Channel, History Channel. He's done it all when it comes to the outdoors. He's been all over planet Earth, but his backyard and his specialty started off with the Amazon. We're going to get into some fun stuff today. Here is Christian Demetrius.
All right, I'm here with Christian Demetrius, and we're going to get into some fun stuff. We're talking in the pregame about the documentary of director of photography, Visions of Light, but he's also, you know, got quite a resume, you know, TV host and everything. So we're going to get into it. I want to go back into, you know, the algorithm, I call it, of how, what built you, you know? We're trying to discover what is the secret sauce of everybody that actually gets to kind of do what they want to do, you know, and how they got it. So let's go back to the beginning. Where are you from? Tell us a little about yourself. Tell us about mom and dad, what they do for a living. I want to kind of know the beginning of Christian Demetrius.
Hi, it's an honor. Oh,
by the way, typical Americans just jump right in. It's like, you know, like at a bar or something. Tell me about yourself. Like, you know, like people outside of it, sometimes America's like, God, these people want to know everything about me. But it's a podcast, right?
Yeah, actually, it's my first time doing that in U.S. I think my first podcast in U.S. So.
Oh, really? Hey, you're in good hands. We're going to take care of you. Don't worry about it.
So thank you, Michael. Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to share my experience with you and all your audience. I usually do a lot of talks in US. Actually, I have one in Boston in March that I'm presenting there. Some of my movies and short clips that I do for many channels around the world, all focused on wildlife. And that began very early in my life, not filming, but I always was related to nature. Since I was a young kid, I grew up in a small town in Brazil, in the middle of the mountains. I would say more like Boulder or something like similar you have here in Colorado. It's a city I know that resembles the same city I was born. And I always was connected to nature. I think when my friends used to go and do sports like football or other things, I would go camping. I would go be a Boy Scout to be more of nature. So then outdoor sports as I grew up. So my passion was always nature, and I could not avoid being away from that. I could not never be in an office, but that was a long process of trying to know me, trying to understand life and everything, and then brought me to biology. But I was a very small town back then, and I had no idea that I could make documentaries, that I can work in a film industry, because my dad was he had a small business, my mom worked at home, and we're a very kind of poor family. So that was very away from me. It's like a reality that I could not even imagine. So I had to leave town, get my backpack, move to another big city in the south of Brazil to do college degree in biology. And then there I started getting to know more about this industry, got into diving. That was my first contact with a profession, the diving industry. I became a dive instructor. As long as I was doing biology. And there I got my first camera and I got first thing underwater. My first shots was doing underwater photography, which is something that I could never imagine. I would think only Jacques Cousteau and all those guys would make that.
Dating yourself, Jacques Cousteau, ladies and gentlemen, who's a famous underwater, you know, documentarian for all sea life.
Yeah. And then that was an inspiration too. So, and I began shooting clients because my goal is always to share that passion. So,
well, you had clients. What kind of clients did you have at this point in the stage of your life? Did you, you know, I mean,
how? Student. on this like diving industry. Was I became an instructor, and my clients were students. I would take them to diving. Like we'd go out on an island, and we show them the underwater world. Before that, I was like a hiking guide as well. So I was always trying to take people into nature.
How old are you at this point?
Sorry?
How old are you at this point?
I was like 19, 20.
Okay. So that's how the photography started and everything. This is like the what's going to happen later on. This is it. This is, you know, you were just an instructor. You were taking, you know, and you didn't really, I don't think, did you have an idea that you're going to become like a host and, you know, like all this stuff? And no, you had no idea. Okay.
Oh, like I said, like my goal was to share my passion. My passion was nature, to share nature. So come with me and enjoy this, experience this. And then while I was doing that, I would take some pictures and film them so they could go at home, take back home and share that as well with more people. And then I realized, whoa, so I can bring people here and share that, or I can take nature to them and spread this even more. So that I kind of start doing the opposite, like doing more images and then would distribute that so they could, this could like reach many more people.
Now, what year is this?
That was like 2001.
So this is before Instagram. This is before Facebook even. And it's like, how did you, I mean, would you share it on MySpace? I mean, how did you share? I don't even think MySpace was around back then. How did you share these images with the world at that point?
Well, that we were doing through DVDs and video. And then the people would take that back. Yeah. And then we're doing like videos and VHS videos. And would like send that in stores or any other places. And then became DVDs that we could copy more. And then my first thing back with the internet, I think, was a blog that we did on like a very, I don't remember even like the platform, but was one of the first ones. Like I would just write and share this experience. And then came social media was in 2008, I think. Yeah. Facebook came in 2008. And then that's when we kind of got more into that. Before we had Orkut. Here in Brazil, Orkut was big. It was okay. Before Facebook.
And did that? How do you pronounce it? Orkut?
Orkut. Orkut was a social media, the first one of the social media like Facebook.
When that came around, let's talk about that. When that came around, did you automatically get a light bulb and be like, oh my God, this is going to be able to spread my message and this is huge. And did you jump on it right away and start, you know, putting all your pictures and videos up on that? Or what happened there?
I think wasn't planned, like was much more organic. Like everything in my life before was very like intuition and just doing, just following my dreams, just like, I need to do that. I don't have any other option. There's no choice. I won't do anything else. I just pursuing my dream. I was just like doing that. And then when that came, was just another tool. So I could share that. And then I would see with time that I was getting more responses. But it was more like a small community, people sharing that. I would not get any like financial or business benefit from that. But when Facebook came, yes, I did that. I wasn't just like meeting old friends and then getting along with like old pals, but just like sharing my experience. And that like kind of opened my doors to the world. Like people from many production companies start knowing me, knowing my job. Seeing that was like a legit passion that I had, and then start hiring me from many jobs.
Let's talk about that point.
Big impact on
that's
that,
an
that.
Interesting point right there. That moment when the world kind of opens up globally, you know, online in Facebook, and you have this arsenal work, which there's a huge lesson there. I like to think about these moments because one day there's going to be another platform, you know, and somebody said, well, I don't have anything for this platform because it's, you know, I'm not doing it for my passion. I'm doing it because I would do it because I feel like a, you know, that because it can get me somewhere, but you were doing it because of your passion. And then you had a lot of art, a lot of, things to show, and the right moment came along, but all that passion and all that work was saved up. So by the time you hit that, you get all these people kind of, reaching out to you because you had your head start, because it wasn't, you weren't just waiting. That's a big thing for people, is like, well, I'm going to wait because everybody else is on that bandwagon, an artist or whatever. That's a big thing that goes into people's heads. So what was the first time when somebody, I just want to know that moment, like what, when you said, oh my God, they're going to hire me. Would you remember that moment that somebody found you on Facebook and they said, they're going to hire me? What was that little job for? What was that? What happened?
Well, I don't know if I remember that. I remember a few cases, but yeah. So just complimenting what I say, that one thing that I always had in my mind, I never waited to have like a better camera, a better thing, or a platform to do something. I always thought we need to do the best we can with the tools we have in hand until we have better tools to do even better. So that's always my idea. So I started like with a very small camera. And then with that image, I would sell the story to these guys. They say, the first contact, I saw something you did. I think it was National Geographic Television, which was a production company in the base in Washington. It's not Nat Geo TV. It's the production company inside National Geographic. And they saw some pink dolphins images and they say, well, that's something you wanna film. Can we show us and tell more about that? And then that's why we start like getting in touch, and then they kind of hired me to go on the shoot and do that. And then that was one of the beginnings.
Where do you find pink dolphins?
In the Amazon. They are exclusive from the Amazon. And that's another thing. I was showing a lot of Brazil, and Brazil has a lot of wildlife. Like it's one of the most diverse countries in the world. So I was a specialist on this area. So I was going to the Amazon, to the Pantanal, and showing the animals from here. And there's a lot of interest in all these big production companies to film here and tell these stories. Because, everybody has seen Africa, lions, giraffe. There's still stories to tell, but was kind of saturated by the moment. And then they were discovering more that we had here.
I love this, and I like to romanticize things, so forgive me. But, when I think of this poor kid from Brazil who has disadvantages, but then he takes what advantages he has passion, and then he's like, you know what? I'm not from Africa, or I don't have this big traveling show, whatever, but this is my backyard, and I'm going to take this, and I'm going to make this, my advantage. And then you did, because let's think about it, the Amazon, all the mysteries and everything that goes on in that whole area. You could spend 20 lifetimes trying to discover everything in the Amazon and I'm a novice, I don't know anything about the Amazon, but I know enough to know that you can't find everything in 20 lifetimes. You're still going to find new things in that area. Can you tell us a little bit about what you learned in the beginning stages when you started doing that in the Amazon?
Yeah, the first time I went there was like just because I'm not from the area. I had to travel like 4 hours by plane to get in the Amazon because it's also a huge country. So my area, we live in Atlantic rainforest. So I know very much that area. In the Amazon, when you arrive, it's like, wow, it's like going from a small city to New York. Mm-hmm. And then you see the big thing, but you're going through like a small jungle to a huge one. And then you see, wow, this is amazing. Like there's so much to see here, so much to discover, and it's endless. You can spend your whole life there. Like many researchers, they do, and they don't even know like scratch from what is in there. There's so many mysteries. So every time it's the same thing, the same feeling. It's not like every time I go there, it's like the same time. It's like we know the scratch, but deeper I go, more things I discover. Even if I go for the same subject, like pink dolphins, I did like this shoot many times. Even now, next year or this year, I'm doing again pink dolphins. And I have to try to approach in a different way and get a different image and a different behavior. So every time there's something more to discover, even from the subject that I know a lot. So it's endless resource for everyone, even for filmmakers, especially for filmmakers.
So you start doing a lot more of that. And then you, when did you start hosting it? You host a TV show down there, or where do you host this TV show?
Yeah, was one of the most popular TV shows in Brazil, in the Sunday afternoon TV shows, like Brazilian Oprah here. And we had a segment about wildlife, and that was, I think, 2007, 2008, I started hosting. And that was until the show ended like 2 years ago. And then in between that, I started doing my series in National Geographic. So we have a series in National Geographic Brazil that I'm still doing. So it's wildlife with some part of research and conservation. And then we show the behind the scenes, and I present this behind the scenes of how we get those shots.
How does that change your life? A poor boy in a small town in Brazil, and then he starts doing this TV show. Then you start walking around. Sometimes people recognize you, I would think, maybe. What was that like?
Yeah, it's interesting, but I never get something like, I never changed myself because of that. That's something that it gave me more possibilities to do more of what I like. I can travel all over the world anytime I want to see and do things that I love. Doing the same things, like when I'm on holidays, I go to a new place that I want to go, but the job didn't take me there, film and share. So I kind of do the same thing while in holidays, when I work, and open many possibilities to do more and to spread more my passion. But if I see me back then when I was a kid and then a teenager and young and discover, I think in my mind it's the same thing. It's the same passion. The same person doing the same things with more resources. That's the only thing. It's not like I can do anything. I'm famous. I just don't want to do this. No, it's the same person all along. And I want to keep like that. And sometimes I don't even think I'm myself as good or anything. It's always like, I need to get better. I need to do more. I need to do something. I need to learn something new. It's always, It's a competition with myself all the time in my mind.
When you started traveling around outside of the pink dolphins or something, when you came outside of that, you came across something. Let's go over some highlights of things that really surprised you, of some milestones that were like, wow, this is different. Things that almost you couldn't imagine about, or anything like that.
Yeah. Filming and diving with orcas, killer whales in Norway, and that's being in the middle of the pod while they're hunting and hunting for food, and you're there filming that, and they're passing like a foot in front of you, and you're there while they're eating, and then that's in 32 degrees water, 34, like today, like the temperature you are today. And all freezing, and then you leave the camera, go back to the boat, and then you see northern lights, like that beautiful sky.
That's the same moment that you, when you were filming the orcas and they're feeding, and you get out of the water and you look at the northern lights.
Well, that was an hour interval, like when you drop, and you still have that sensation of the orcas, and then when you drop, they're back on the pier, and then you look, and then the northern lights starting because the days are very short. We go there in November, and then I was like, wow, what is this? And that repeats over in a few days. And that was something that is still unique. It's
heck of a day.
Yeah.
Well, heck of a 24 hours. And then it's so funny because you're filming, you're doing that. Do you have to you put your gear down and you look up and then you're like, oh, do I got to grab my gear again? I got to get this footage.
Yeah, it's all the time. It's rare the days when you just look and you don't want to film that, because you always kind of want to share that. But for Northern Lights, for instance, you set the camera, leave it working as a time lapse there, and then you can enjoy without having to, you don't need to be with the camera all the time. So you can set up, leave it filming, and just enjoy. But with the orcas, for instance, I would never leave my cameras. Let's just look at the orcas and enjoy. I'll always be with the camera filming, unless I run out of battery or cards or something happen. And then that I would drop and enjoy that just to see that event.
Let's get into some Uber. We were talking in the pregame about, you know, visions of light, you know, and directors of photography. And let's get into some Uber filmmaking stuff just real quick, because it'd be silly not to talk to you. You were talking and Christian said, yeah, I built my very first drone, you know, and now he was showing me the Phantom 3 or whatever, the DJI Maverick 3 or whatever. Let's get into one. What year did you build that first drone? And then I want to get into like some drone techniques just real quick, you know, for people listening, because any, you know, when you first get a drone, it's like, okay, I can move in, I can move out, I can maybe wrap around. But like, I want to talk about, you know, drone techniques and filming, but what year was it that you built that first drone?
I think it was around 2008 or 9, was just before the first Phantoms, they came out. Yeah. And we could buy like a set with all the parts, and you had to assemble yourself. So I have pictures, I mean, soldering and then molding, doing that thing. It never flew properly, when I could never do like a great image with that, even with the first Phantom, because after that, I think a year after that or two, I had my first Phantom that would take a small GoPro. Didn't have your own camera, like the second or third version. So, and then from there, everything became easier to do, like to fly drones. That was a revolution. Drones were really a revolution. Now, remembering now, I think was 2010, because 2012, we started doing like drone, like 11 years ago with Phantom.
Yeah.
So.
Now, I'm just curious, those first drones from 2012 to now, one is those, I remember I got a drone and it was a 2014. There's really difficult to operate. It was just a pain in the ass. It always took the fun out of it, you know? And then once you got it, okay, fine. You could do some nice shots, but then transferring the footage from that little GoPro, whatever, that really cool looking three that you showed me, how much easier is that? I mean, like it specifically, what did they, you know, and how much, you know, also when that drone, that first drone, it would drop to the ground or something. Sometimes it would break a lot easier. You're always buying new propellers and stuff. What's the difference between that and now? How easier to make it?
Well, they have GPS. They kind of, it's, if you look, you can fly and you lose the control, he stays there. If run off battery, it comes back to you, it's much safer. There are some maps that it follows, so, and have obstacle avoidance, so we have sensors all over it, so it's hard to crash. But even I've crashed like 5 drones already, like lost forever in the sea and rivers, waterfalls, doing some crazy flights. Yeah. and pushing the limits always, but it's much safer than the other drones. And it's kind of like you have simulators to learn now. You can, the same app that you use has a simulator. So if you're doing it starting, you can just simulate flights and then you get a drone, it'll be the same thing. Back then I would buy a small, the cheapest drone that was much harder, but has the same command. And I would train inside my home, like going up and then going to the room, getting out, and then to get like the ability to fly through small ambients, like areas. Because once you are out there, it's much easier. Today, I think anyone could fly a drone now. It's much easier, and it's a technology that came to stay, and we stay and evolve. I think in the future, everyone could have a drone to do many things.
All right. So let's talk some specifics real quick before we get out of the drone section. What are some techniques, anybody, you know, like that you find, it's like, you know what, that's a nice move, you know, like I guess I'm asking, Michael Chapman and Raging Bull. You know, he does that long shot where they walk out of the locker room and they go all the way into the ring, and then he climbs it from a steady cam, and then he climbs on a doll on a boom, and then he lifts up and into the fighter showing the ring. That's a nifty little shot. Now, what have you done on a drone saying, you know what, these are some cool shots that I've learned to do on a drone. Can you share some of that with us?
Yeah, I think I got a lot of inspirations from this sequence that are long sequence that tells one story and one sequence without a cut. So that's always a goal, to transfer that to wildlife, because it's much easier when you have a lot of, like, you plan the scene and you have characters that would play the role at the exact same time you're passing through, and you have time to do it over and over again until you master and you do it. But wildlife, you can't control the animals. I want to do that with the animal and then show the story and everything. And we've been doing that, like, in the past 3 months. We have been shooting in Argentina a series for National Geographic, and one of the characters was a penguin. And we're trying to do the same thing, get out of the sea with the penguins, following him, like going through all the areas that he go the whole way until he finds his den and feeds the chick. And then we were like trying to do the same thing, like out of the sea, find one penguin, it looks to one side, go to another one, tell my story, come back to the penguin until it reaches its nest. And then that was like, took a long time to do it. And that's something I personally always pursuing, like one sequence, one take, tell the whole story. Nice. But in wildlife, it's usually 2 minutes max. We can, right. It's a long, long shot, that's right.
No pun intended. So in the water, drone, so to speak, they don't make a drone that goes in water, then out of water, do they?
No.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That's next, right?
Yeah, in the water, but not underwater, but from, like, they're swimming from the top. We cut from an underwater shot.
Yeah.
And then from a swimming from the top. And then when it leaves the water, the drone is already there.
Yeah.
And we can go very low, go around, chase, and then follow, go off and come back. And then different than just doing like the scenery, which is something that we go sometimes from jungle to outside and review areas. We're trying to follow one animal and tell the story from the animal perspective, going up and down, revealing, and took a lot of planning and a lot of luck as well.
What's the hardest move? Is it doing a 360 around your subject, moving in, moving out, moving up, moving down? What would you say is the hardest way to?
The hardest part is to finding the right animal. That's the right.
That's it. Yeah. Really, because the drone operation is not that difficult. Really, it's about the dynamics outside of the drone, right?
Yeah, because most of the animals, they would actually react to the drone, and that would look bad. Like, so, and so wildlife is always about that as well. Finding the friendly animal that doesn't care about what you're doing, and you stay with that animal and you get everything. Just stay alone, stay a lot with that animal until we got what you need. So took a long time. Once you found the animal, we had been training with the wrong animals. And then we could do all we need and say, this one doesn't react. This one is focused on his task. And then we could just follow and do anything we wanted.
It's interesting. You know, they say don't work with animals and kids in film. Your job is quite difficult because you have to manage them just outside of the shot that you're trying to compose. That's interesting. So let's talk about, you put yourself in some dynamic situations. Let's talk about danger. Because that would be, you know, I'm trying to figure, you know, like, you're out there, you know, what has been some situations where you felt like, you know, this is, this has been some life-threatening situations. You ever been in those?
Yeah, there is a few, especially with humpback whales in Mexico. I had one close encounter with an animal that is not even aggressive, but we were in the Pacific, and it's like it's Socorro Islands, which is far from the coast. We're staying on a boat and we're chasing whales to get in the water and film them. And there was like a mom and cub and a escort, which is a male that tries to mate with that female. And it's always around, it's always chasing. And then it's really hard to approach because they most of the time they avoid us. So I, with a small boat, I put myself in front of the group of the whales. They were coming and then I jumped in the water and then they disappear. And then I spent like a few minutes looking for them. And then I saw the female and the cub in the bottom. I was free diving, no equipment, just my camera. So I went down to see it better. They were about 100 feet down.
Yeah.
And I went down like 50 feet because I could hold my breath just like for that. Look then, well, that looks nice. And then we'll take a picture. And then on the way I was coming up, I hit something really hard. My head hit something really hard. And I didn't know in the first second, I didn't know what was. And then I saw the whale, the pectoral fin just hitting my head, my back. And then the back fin also, my legs, I was like flipping underwater, no air. My camera was sinking because it pushed me against my camera. So I had to lose and then hit it here in my chest really hard. So I had the camera sinking and it took my fins off when it spinned me. And like everything happened really fast. Like this is seconds. And then I would say, well, I'm done here. But in a second, I could just grab my fin back, swing down to get my camera and go back up and look to the whales like it was kind of turning around, looking at me. And I could see in the eyes like that. I think the whale was scared as well. I don't know. I think she thought it was something else and hit me and didn't know what was going on. And I could surface to the water and the wave went in a different direction, but it was kind of almost a close call.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's a good one. Wow. So, you must've been, when you were like reaching the top, were you like nearly totally out of breath?
Yeah.
Oh man.
And then you have like a rush of adrenaline that you do anything you can to survive on that moment, and always keeping my eyes on the whale to see if it could come back, but it didn't come back. And then when I was surfaced after a while, I saw the three back together going away, and I just had to call the boat and man, I just got got over, like someone saw the bus that went through me and was hit by a whale. But I think that was one of the I think more scary moment. I also got lost in Galapagos, you know, when you drift away.
Yeah.
And I spent like hours in the sea, I thinking about nobody will find me. You've seen that happen sometimes. You get carried by a current and you float and the boats stay away and they try to look for you, but they don't find you. Yeah. And then that was a scary moment as well.
How'd that end? How did they find you or how did you find the boat?
Yeah, I think after a while, they realized that I was gone and they started looking for me and I kind of could swim to a bay and wait for there because I would look down and I would see like about 50 sharks and up and see some other birds that were like kind of signalizing that I was there, like interested in me. So they could see the birds and then they came where the birds are and they would find me.
Wow. Oh man. Well, you know, occupational hazards, I guess. So, where are you at today? What's going on in your career right now?
Well, I'm in a moment that we're doing this series for National Geographic and it's a series that we're in the fifth season already. It's like called Untamed Planet. So we go to a country or an area and we tell stories about the wildlife from that area. So we just finished Argentina. Now we start editing. All the shows just finished filming. And now is the time to edit and deliver the show by the middle of the year. And then next year, we still don't know where we're going. We're thinking about North America or the Caribbean and something that it's a place that the Caribbean I love because I live there in my life. And then it's a place that the Bahamas, the Caribbean, it's a passion for me. And there's a lot of stories. And also North America wildlife, it's just amazing. Like everything that you have there from like Yellowstone, and it's a great place. And it's all in my right radar. And also the idea is to make it, we finished a movie last year. It's a feature film in a documentary form about Blue Brazil. It's about the coast of Brazil. So that's available on Disney Plus. And we're trying to do a different story now about orcas and whales as well. So this is a project that maybe we keep us working for another 3 years.
Well, let's talk about 5 to 10 to 20. I mean, do you plan that far ahead? I like to ask this to people that have done, you know, a lot of great achievements like you have. What do you have planned for the future for yourself?
Well, the future, it's like I say, it's a lot of things. I don't plan much for the long term. Like I know, just want to keep doing what I do. It's always been like that, improving, learning new skills, something, using the technology that we have now to capture different stories or the same stories in a different perspective, and living the present, keeping my attention always in the present and what it's out there to improve my future. But I don't know what will happen. We just like keep walking until we reach something. And this is in my career as wildlife filmmaking, but also I want to do something more for the planet. We are working in an area that we are trying to protect, buying an area that was like taken by cattle ranches and farms, and it's a very important area for fresh water because there's a lot of springs there. And we were trying to rewild in this area, plant native trees, bring the animals back, and do like a ritual, like giving back to nature what nature gave me my whole life. Get an area and turn that back and as it was many years ago.
Well, I'll give you a nice little poetic button as we come to a close. Christian Dimitri, little boy from a poor little town, you know, would like to love to, you know, discover nature. That's probably how, I'll give you one more movie. Since you're a filmmaker, I'll give you one more reference. Brad Pitt in Legends of the Fall, you know, he's a little boy that likes to hunt, and he spilled blood with the wild animal, a grizzly bear, when he was younger. And at the end of the movie, he spills blood with that animal again. And that's how I see, hopefully, you. And I think that's you, you know, not getting killed by a grizzly bear at the end, but, you know, still just doing what you do, you know, for your whole life. You know, you're going to go out the way you came in. And I think that's very nice and a poetic button. Please tell everybody how they could find out more about you.
Sorry, Ed.
Did I lose? I lost him. He's like, wait, you lost me at Brad Pitt. No, like, tell everybody how they could find out more about more of your work.
Just talking about Brad Pitt, I did a shot for Terrence Malick for this movie Voyage of Time that was narrated by Brad Pitt. Oh, and it's a documentary about the world, the story of evolution of life, and what's a very interesting shot that I did, and was narrated at the end by Brad Pitt, which is something that it's a really achievement I had in life as well.
Well, that's awesome. Terrence Malick, great, great filmmaker, and Brad Pitt, great actor, and now he produces a lot of things. Plan B, and also now Krista Demetrius with a lot of talent on that.
Yeah, more of my work, it will be like in National Geographic all over the world, and you can follow me on Instagram. I'm not much into social media because I'm doing a lot of like real life experience, but I'll be back with more content and working more to organize social media, but I share what I'm doing there, all my work. But the building documentaries and films takes a long time. So I'm focused on that. It's still creating content for TV and cinema. But yes, on my Instagram, C. Demetrius, Christian Demetrius, you can find a lot of my work. And yeah, I'll be around in Boston and for the film festival over there. So yeah,
I say go check it out. It's truly, I mean, it's fascinating. Just think, you know, not, you know, in a different generation, you know, I mean, you could always get National Geographic in the old days, but you can't, there's certain things that, you know, even just talking to you today of like pink dolphins, what, you know, it's like, you know, just certain things that you'll see there. I implore you to go check it out. It's amazing. Christian Demetrius, thank you so much for sharing your story today. Truly fascinating.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure. Like I said,
that was Emmy Award-winning cinematographer, TV host, and outdoor extraordinaire, Christian Demetrius. Got a nice little quote about the Amazon for Christian. Imagine man without lungs. Imagine Earth without Amazon rainforest. Vinita Kinra. Thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hanging out with you all in the next episode. All right, have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week, we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically, you're going to find it here. All right, thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.